Lauren Milberger.
I'm Rachel Leishman.
And you are listening to the Fordcast.
A Harrison Ford podcast.
So if you tuned in to hear us talk about Chris Pine,
you'll probably hear about it.
Yeah, so congrats.
Yep.
You've reached the right podcast.
Because I love my boy, Chris Pine. He was a cowboy in the March Madness promotion. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
There's this video for...
Wow, I wasn't kidding. Let's talk about Chris Pine.
Guys, it's me. When am I not talking about Chris Pine? So, in the March Madness... Also, wait. There was something we didn't talk about on The Fugitive that I forgot about until right now and it drove me nuts.
By the way, we're doing a doubleheader again, so that's why.
He says...
What?
That he's 6 foot something with brown hair and brown eyes. I'm like, Harrison Ford doesn't have brown eyes. They're hazel.
Oh, I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, he has brown eyes. And I was like, he doesn't have brown eyes.
This happens a lot. Hazel eyes are mistaken for brown eyes a lot.
When I was little, I thought my brother had brown. Like, my whole family, news about my family, we all have green eyes. Like, it's my mom's side, all of the women in her family had green eyes. Her and her sister have green eyes. Mm-hmm. My oldest brother doesn't because of his dad, and my cousin doesn't. But me and my brother both have green eyes, but they all vary in whatever color green mm-hmm. they are. My eyes are more, like, a lighter green, and my mom's are, like, blue-green, and then my brother's are dark hazel. So when I was younger, I thought his eyes were brown. So that's why when they said that, I'm like, his eyes are brown, they're green.
And also, hazel picks up a lot of what you're wearing, too, right?
To, like, green eyes do, too. Like, if I had, like, Lauren is wearing a green shirt, so if I had that shirt on, my eyes would be really, really green.
And that is sort of how the myth of Liz Taylor having purple eyes, because she would wear purple all the time, and it would make her eyes look purple. Yeah, because there's no such thing as purple eyes.
Yeah. But, yeah, I think, it's very interesting. About that. Anyway, so Chris Pine.
Back to
Chris Pine on the Harrison Ford podcast. So Chris Pine, for you guys who don't like sports, March Madness was happening while we were recording this. The final is on Monday.
Basketball stuff, right?
Yes. It's college basketball. Yeah, so I know that. They had the commercials for it, and my dad didn't even tell me this was a commercial. I had to tell him, and he's like, oh yeah, I've seen that. I'm like, do you know your daughter? But... There's a March Madness commercial where, because it's back out west for, like, the first time in, like, 20 years. And so it is Chris Pine going, go west, young man. And he's, like, in a cowboy hat with his bald head.
Where is he from? Is he from the Midwest?
No,
is that
he's from Los Angeles.
Oh.
He's from, like, near where I'm from. That's why I'm like, bro. But go west, meaning, like,
well, no, go I just wonder west. If there was, like, a...
He's in a cowboy hat, cowboy boots with a belt buckle that says basketball. Yelling about going out west. And there's a part where his dad is like, he goes, oh, there's great things about the west. Chips? Or no, he said the last time the March Madness tournament was out west, Chips was on the air. His dad was on Chips. His dad is Robert Pine. And so he goes...
His dad was on the show Chips?
Yeah, his dad's Robert Pine.
I had no idea.
There was a giant... Lauren is looking like this. It's behind me. There was a giant, like, Chips thing behind him. And he goes... That's my dad. And, like, points at Robert Pine. And I was like, God damn it. And so I called my dad, and my dad was like, yeah, those are great.
I will put a link to this commercial. You send it to me, and I will put it on the show notes.
It's on my Twitter, but I'll send it to you. I wrote an article about it today that was like, I don't know what's going on with
Chris Pine. So we are doing the second of the Jack Ryan
movies.
Which
is why I'm talking about Chris Pine, because I don't talk about this movie.
We don't, because we both hated it. Anyway, but that's why I prepared fun games and other stuff for us to talk about. But we will talk about Clear and Present Danger, which was directed again by Philip Noyce.
Philip Noyce.
I am right. Okay, Noyce. Awesome. And was written by, you have that.
I have that right here. It was written by John Millis from Apocalypse Now. Steven Zaillian from Schindler's List.
Won the Oscar the year that The Fugitive was nominated for an Oscar, which we didn't talk about last time.
Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. And Donald E. Stewart, who also did the other Jack Ryan movies. Did you do the one with Chris Pine, sir?
I don't know. So, yeah. This was the last Jack Ryan movie that Harrison Ford did.
Yeah, because the next one was Sea Pine.
We will talk about... why we didn't like it, and also talk about why it probably wasn't a success because they were also writing it as they went along. Although it worked for The Fugitive, although not for you. So I thought that we would play another edition of...
What role did he turn down, or how did he almost die?
Well, we're going to do that too, probably. But first we're going to play, what roles did Harrison Ford turn down?
Okay.
Because he's just doing a whole bunch of plethora of turned down movies. So, in 1994, did Harrison turn down, play along everybody, A, The Client, starring Tommy Lee Jones, B, True Lies, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger, or C, The Shawshank Redemption with Mr. Morgan Freeman?
He would be Tim Robbins.
Okay, or Tim Robbins. But he would be Morgan Freeman, probably.
Oh, I say True Lies.
It was The Shawshank Redemption.
Well, glad they gave it... Okay, if he was supposed to be Tim Robbins...
No, because he was, because in the book, he is, by calling his name is Red, he's an Irish guy in the book. He's an Irish white guy in the book.
Well, no, it was Morgan Freeman's part.
Well, it became Morgan Freeman's part, but that's not what the book was.
No, I know, but I was like, nope, it's Morgan Freeman.
So you understand why they may have offered it to Harrison Ford, who is a half Irish guy. Okay, one more, okay. Did he turn down which of these movies? A, I Love Trouble with Julia Roberts. He would have been the Nick Nolte role.
Mm-hmm.
So think about their chemistry. Did he turn down the Travolta role in Pulp Fiction? Or C, the Van Damme role in Time Cop?
I'll say Van Damme.
I Love Trouble. That's a hard one because that's a weird movie.
That's
and it's a
fine.
Bad movie.
If it was Pulp Fiction, I would have been like, no.
Yeah, well, that the whole thing was that was offered to Travolta because, you know, one, Tarantino was a huge fan of his.
And he does the whole dance number.
Well, yeah.
That two, clearly even has this thing in it. Like,
two was because his career was sagging and he could afford to bring him on and it, like, you know, did this huge thing for his career. So, you know, not that
wasn't he nominated for Pulp Fiction?
He might have been.
I don't know. I'm still mad at the fucking Grammys for not... they had John Travolta there and didn't have him come out for the Bee Gees tribute in a white suit.
Maybe he can't fit into it.
I don't care. I wanted it.
So back to Clear and Present Danger. Mr. Ford was unsure about doing a sequel because, you know, that sort of had been his tried and trade for so long. And a big issue with the script is that in the original book... Jack Ryan is barely in it. He's like behind a desk for the first half of the book and he's barely in it. Probably because they had to explain all of the, you know, sort of intrigue that happens. And shocker, John Clancy hated it.
Tom.
Oh, what did I say?
John.
Oh, yeah, it's Tom Clancy. I don't know why I said John. They changed it a lot as they went along, but there were several different drafts because, much like with wanting to have a clean-shaven Harrison Ford, they felt if we have a Harrison Ford movie, Harrison Ford needs to be in the movie.
This movie, I can't even summarize it for you guys.
So we're not going to do something?
No, because I don't know what happened.
That's true. Okay, well, how about this? Describe the movie
that I think happened.
No, I was going to say in like 5 lines.
No, I'm going to describe it how I think
do a log
it
line. Do a log line. If anyone doesn't know, a log line is like one or two sentences that would like be in like the synopsis or when you submitted your script.
Yeah, but here's my thing. Even with that, I'd be like, nothing makes sense. And he calls his son Pal. Listen, okay.
He calls his son Pal?
Yeah, when he goes to leave. He goes, goodbye, sweetie. See you later, pal. To his son. And I'm like, well, who calls their son pal? Anyway.
Dad humor.
Anyway, I will quickly try and figure out what this
means. With bated breath, I am waiting to hear because I could not focus on this movie.
If you guys remember the end of Patriot Games, he was like all about his family because his wife was pregnant. This movie is like, it was a boy.
Okay. Yeah.
Like, it was basically like, because remember the end of the movie, they find out what the baby is, but you don't know. That's like the cliffhangers. You don't know what the name of the baby, or like what the gender of the baby is. So then in the beginning of Clear and Present Danger, it's like, it's a boy, and he's like two. So you would think that they would be like, you're sitting at a desk for the rest of your career now. You have a new baby. Not the case. He's still Jack Ryan.
Of course.
And so, but it's Jack like, Ryan. It's very convoluted, and
it's a political story about power and how power can be corrupted. And
yeah. Here's the basic, because I missed half of it because I was zoned out because I didn't care. So there is a Mexican drug lord. Colombian.
You go. Finger on the nose.
I was like, where is he from? But and then as soon as I remembered he said Castro, I was like,
You might be reading my mind, though, because they filmed it in Mexico.
Yeah, it was like, it didn't look like Colombia. But anyways, because they compare him to Castro. So this lovely Colombian
he is quite
drug lord.
90s attractive, isn't he? Like, when '90s attractive.
Which one? The Latino Jack Ryan or the man?
The Latino Jack Ryan. He's like '90s
which
attractive.
We're not being assholes. That was literally how he's described in the movie is.
Yeah,
he's like a Latino Jack Ryan.
Because there's a whole big issue in the middle of the movie where Jack Ryan's wife runs into his boss's secretary, which was weird because she goes, oh, is Jack still at the FBI? You work with him. How did you not know he's still at the FBI? But it's a whole thing so that later on, when this character, who's played by an amazing actress who I love, gets killed, the wife can go, oh, I saw the man that she was dating from the back. She described him as a Latin Jack Ryan. Continue.
Oh, boy. So then, they're saying that they're buying coffee, and it's like $12 million for coffee.
Money laundering.
So it's drugs and shit. So then Americans are trying to also, frame the Colombians to say that the Colombians...
Well, they killed the president's friends.
Yeah.
And who were laundering money.
And then so... there was a car bomb, and then Jack Ryan's wife calls and's like, I miss Skip Cat's movies. I don't fucking know what happens. And then
she does nothing in this movie.
Yeah, but she goes, yeah, Ann Archer's like, please tell me you're not in this. He's like, I'm right in the middle of it.
Pretty much. Ann Archer's like, hi, I'm here because I signed a contract for more than one movie. Okay, I'm leaving now.
Yeah, she's in it for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then where the other movie sets up everything very clearly, you know what's happening. You know, you're like, cool. On board. This one is like, we're not setting up shit. Try and follow along. And
you can tell that this was a hard book to adapt. It just seems obvious to me. It's because the movie is 2 hours and 25 minutes. That there was so much in the book that had to be told for it to make sense. That then they should have picked a different book to adapt. I know that Clear and Present Danger was a big number one seller, but the plot is too convoluted to put in a 2-hour and 25-minute movie.
Or not? Yeah, it was so fucking long. Or not even that. It was so bad. Anyways, finishing the summary, he literally, it ends up. I don't even remember how it ended.
Okay, so
that was my summary. So confusing.
You're gonna hand me the baton, and I'm just gonna finish it.
Okay.
So through all of this, we know that William Dafoe's character is sort of a for hire mercenary. That James Earl Jones' character, who is dying of cancer, and so Jack takes over his job, dies. So no more James Earl Jones. Which, as I was watching, I was like, oh, this is a setup in the books because Jack Ryan's gonna go up in the ranks and come president. I don't know why I know that, but I know that happens in the Jack Ryan movies. Anyway,
so you're telling me Chris Pine becomes president?
Yeah.
Yes, I'm gonna be the first lady.
Woo, so happy for you, Rachel. This is amazing.
The first lady.
I think you should just go and pick out the China pattern now.
I'm going to pick out the China.
China.
Guys, I don't this movie. I keep bringing up Chris Pine to avoid it.
And I would bring up anything to avoid it, too. Here's the thing about the movie. I think it has some great sections. It's too long. But I know why it's too long is because for it to make kind of sense, they have to explain so much.
Yeah.
But in a 700-page book, sure. In a 2-hour-and-plus movie, because at one point, he actually teams up with William Dafoe, and it's kind of interesting, and there's a lot of great action scenes, and I'm like, okay, all right. So if you just took, chunks of the movie and, pushed it together, but, there was one character that ended up being what was it? It was Harris Yulin, who's an amazing actor, plays James Cutter, the national security advisor. I thought he was the chief of staff for half the movie. Because he kept coming in and out. I thought, this is his Leo McGarry. This is his guy. And
Then the weird part about when he hacks into that guy's computer.
That was kind of funny, though. Oh, and by the way, in that scene, so there's a scene, guys, where he hacks into the one of his
the guy with the glasses,
the CIA deputy director of operations, played by Henry. I can never say that last name.
Czerny?
I think so. It's Polish. Who is in Quantico right now and was Conrad Grayson in Revenge.
What? Oh.
He was Norfolk in Quantico. The Tudors.
My brain went to you saying he was in Guantanamo, and I was like, what did he do?
I missed this part of the
what
movie.
What did he do? No, at the man. I was like, what did he do that he went to Guantanamo Bay?
That's a whole other movie, Rachel.
No, I thought the actor went to Guantanamo.
I'm sorry, guys. This episode is going to be all over the place
because we don't want to
talk about it. But he goes to this hacker who works there to help him get into pretty much like he's the deputy director of operations.
Who is that guy?
So he's the CIA.
Isn't that the guy from like the West Wing?
No. The hacker?
Yeah.
Okay. So that's what I was getting to. So the hacker is played by Greg Germain, who is Fish from Ally McBeal.
Ally McBeal. I was like, you had said the show to me. Guys, you know what we can talk about? How great the scene in Ally McBeal
is. No. Let's not go that far off.
When Robert Downey Jr. sings River. It's my favorite Joni Mitchell song. Actually, Both Sides Now is my favorite Joni Mitchell song. But
I love that song. I do
Guys,
love that song.
I love Joni Mitchell.
So anyway, so pretty much is like behind Jack Ryan's back because you're a Boy Scout. The government is doing, see, this is going to be my summary, short and sweet. The government is doing really bad things behind his back to get the drug cartel, which in the 90s and the 80s, like that was like a bigger thing in America, like political, you know, works for the story. Mm-hmm. It was written in the 80s, the book, but obviously this is the 90s. And Jack finds out that they are doing this behind his back and he says, you have to shut this off or I'm going to stop it. So they shut it off, which means that the guys they sent there have no communication and they're going to die. And Jack feels responsible. So Jack flies down and finds a Willem Dafoe character, not knowing that Willem Dafoe was their head guy. And he's going to kill Jack because, you know, it was his fault. But he lies and they go together and they save the guys and the drug lords die and they fly off in a helicopter.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Guys, Benjamin Bratt is in this
I wasn't sure if you would know who Benjamin Bratt was.
Excuse me. I've seen Miss Congeniality.
Oh, my God. I forgot he was in that. See, when I think of Benjamin Bratt, I think of Law & Order, and I think of that time when he was dating Julia Roberts, because everyone made it a huge deal when I was growing up.
Oh, yeah. But I also remember him from... He's on my mom's list of, like, sexy men still.
Really?
How does he look?
I didn't see how he looked. He still look good?
He was in Doctor Strange. He was fine.
I haven't seen it yet.
My mom made me... I wrote a list for Contras that was, like, 50 men my mom suggests we be into, and like Benjamin Bratt was on it, and like it went from like Chris Pine to Benjamin Bratt, and like you can clearly see where she went, like where she just continued to think of the same guys, because she like went from Andy Garcia to Oscar Isaac, and I was like, okay, she's getting all of her Latino men in this one, and then she's like Idris Elba, ooh, Taye Diggs, ooh, I was like, all right, here we go. Like she would like think of all of her favorite men.
Speaking of Latino men, Miguel Sandoval plays Ernesto Escobedo. I don't know if I did that right. He's been in a million things, including recently Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency, which I loved.
It was
weird because I literally just watched him in an episode of The West Wing. And then I turned on the movie and I was like, hey, is there like three Latino men in the 90s? Like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. But he's an amazing actor. He was also in Medium, and his credits go all the way back to St. Elsewhere. The actor who played Felix Cortez, who is the Latin Jack Ryan, whose name I won't even attempt. You can if you want to. He was in Desperado. Where? He was in 24.
Miguel Sandoval?
Very nice. Very sexy. He is actually from Portugal. He's not even Colombian. Yeah, so.
Yeah, because movies pretend like... Those aren't different things, being Portuguese and being...
Although I feel like it's worse in the Asian community, where it's like, you are not from China, you are actually from...
Singapore.
I was going to say Korean, but...
Singapore also works.
Sure. But I appreciate you finishing my sentences for me, because I can't finish them myself.
Nope.
I'm gonna take this list of actors and I'm gonna flung it across the room now.
Go.
Because that's how I feel about the movie. Although Anne Magnuson, oh, I can't say her name either. Magnuson, yeah. I remember her being in a TV show when I was a kid with Jamie Lee Curtis, which has been cut. Oh, oh my goodness. Anything But Love. It literally got cut off on the paper. Ha ha ha. And she did a lot of theater stuff. And she was in Desperately Seeking Susan, so you may remember her from that. She's an amazing comic actress, even though she plays a dramatic part. And then she gets killed by a guy who she loved, much like in The Americans. Americans obviously stole this plot. Okay, here we go. Throwing. Wow,
thank
that
you
was
for putting it in my bedroom.
Really, really bad. Yeah, it went right into her bedroom. That's great. At least it didn't hit
guys.
BB-8. We didn't like this. So, interesting, the CIA withheld cooperation this time around, but the Pentagon and the DOD, the Department of Defense, had no problem helping them out and gave them aircraft carriers and reserve stations. While they were filming, Pablo Escobar was killed by being found the same way that they found the guy with the audio recording, and they were filming that scene the day that he was killed. So that was weird. Harrison Ford is not driving into the White House. That is CGI, because they wouldn't let them do that. And they wanted to be sure that this is not based on any administration or president, even though I think that Donald Moffat looks like he's supposed to be George Bush. What else we got? This was a very hard shoot. Because most in a lot of other films, when people don't like Harrison's input, I think it creates a lot of tension. They went to film in Mexico after there was some coup against the government, blah, 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 blah. Ford added the end where he's testifying because he wanted to show that he was going against the government and, you know, going through with his, you know, idea that I'm going to, you know, testify against you and get you in trouble. Although they weren't sure if people would like that he was going against the government, which I don't get. Like, they were doing bad things and he exposed them.
Yeah.
Why would they, oh, he's not a patriot. Really? No, I don't agree. And it was Harrison's idea to kill Dan, or as I was calling him, a red shirt. Actually, all of his friends at the CIA were red shirts to me. There was no connection with any of those people that they had any relationship. You knew that they were there just to be killed.
Guys, let me explain what a red shirt is.
Yes.
So, in Star Trek, other than Scotty and Chekhov, when you're in a red... I'm talking in original series. Red shirts, there would always be, like, when the crew went down, it was always, like, Spock, Bones, Kirk, sometimes Sulu... Oh, sometimes Uhura, and a red shirt, meaning you knew that red shirt was going to die because it was no one you knew, no one you cared about, and someone had to die, so it was going to be that red shirt.
You, Simon, I've never met you before. Come down to the surface with us. You'll be fine.
Yeah, it's like, Simon, you're coming down. And it was always some, like, dude who just got killed within, like, 2 minutes. So that's why everyone always says red shirts always die.
But so Harrison, I don't know if you noticed, because it definitely felt pushed to me, and it's obvious it was, when they're, like, trying to forge this relationship when they have, like, in-jokes with each other. And I was like, this is weird, like male bonding. It's because Harrison was throwing it in so that when he gets killed, because that was Harrison's idea, he felt that it added more tension to that scene. And, I mean, it does. You know, like, if he has a friend who gets killed, like, he's... That always, you know, makes a character a little more vengeful, a little more like, you know, pushing them. Of course, Jack Ryan's the only one I think who ends up being alive, because this was a long-ass movie that I wanted to like, and I did not like it at all. I got a Carrie Fisher quote. Why don't we do that?
Yay.
Read the Carrie Fisher quote.
It's no accident he plays a lot of heroes. He plays someone you can rely on who will take care of It's no accident he plays a lot of heroes. He plays someone you can rely on who will take care of what it is, from a kid's hurt finger to a murder or to saving the galaxy. He has that quality.
Yay, Carrie.
Carrie Fisher.
It was also Harrison's idea to be unsure what tie to wear and then put the extra tie in his pocket. And one that I actually really agree added to the tension was when he is hacking into the guy's computer and his printer is out of paper. He felt that that would add tension. Let's take these and we're going to
fling them
across the room.
We're throwing trash in my bedroom.
We are. Well, let's, I keep hitting your bed. Now it looks like breadcrumbs.
Great. Leading you to my bedroom.
But something I think is interesting, because I love political stuff, but just not this, is the Oval Office set. Should I talk about the Oval Office set, Rachel?
Yes, you should.
Okay, awesome. So this set is known... So the Oval Office set is known as the Dave set, which the same... well, the year before, 1993, the movie Dave came out, which is one of my favorite movies with Kevin Kline, and it's directed by Ivan Reitman, and it stars Sigourney Weaver. And so they had to build this set. It was so accurate. And a lot of sort of the West Wing sets and so forth, but particularly this Oval Office set, they kept. Mm-hmm. And people still refer to it as the Dave set. Even today, even though it's from 93, oh yeah, we'll use the Dave set. So for a very long time, that was the only set that was used. Now, I did find an article from 97 that talked about that the Dave set was being used so much that they did build another set in Toronto. And then for American President, which I think was about like 95, Castle Rock did build their own set. But the West Wing was on the Dave set. The Castle Rock set was like Nixon Independence Day. Although the funny thing was, while I was watching this movie, it looked so different. I went, oh, this must be before the Dave set because it looks so different. And I'm so used to seeing the Dave set in so many other movies. And no, it was the Dave set, which is very new. another reason that they didn't dismantle it, though, apparently, is that it's very hard to pack that set because it's an oval. And you end up damaging the plaster. But yeah. Also, like, they can spend a lot of money renting it out. The Pelican Brief was also in that set for this movie. Absolute Power, Hot Shots Part Deux. And by 1996, it had been used over 25 times, as well as a East and West Wing that they added on.
Interesting.
I think so, because I always just had heard that, oh, the Dave set. I figured that was the only set. So there were some other ones, but it's the majority one they use. And throwing across the room. So this movie that we kind of have not really talked about was $4 million over budget and 13 days over schedule. They lost 5 reels of film in the 1994 earthquake. This did not have a lot of luck, this film. William Dafoe, coming from the theater, I'm assuming, and an Oscar nominated for Platoon, he was a little wary about working with a movie star like Harrison Ford, but he said that Harrison has the uncanny ability to know what's being conveyed to the audience. And so he's very impressed by his, you know, film knowledge, and they got along very well. Now, maybe they should have been the whole movie together, but okay.
I would have loved that.
That's what I, again, sections of this movie, cut it up, make it an hour and 45 minutes, and it would have been great. But anyway, it was a big hit, though. And I think because it's Harrison Ford, it's a Jack Ryan movie, and if you like these kind of movies, like, here's the thing also. I was like, this is not an action movie. This is a thriller.
No, yeah.
And I think that also is sort of the issue, too, is that... And in a way, I miss movies that also were more thrillers, so that there is a story. But there was too much story. There was just too much story. That's actually for something else. At the premiere, you'll love this.
Oh, boy.
Harrison Ford said, frankly, I'd rather be milking cows. But I'm pleased to be able to bring people's attention to the film. I think that we all would rather be milking cows than watching this film. they had a big fundraiser in D.C., which was the first time since The Right Stuff for the premiere in L.A. What was a fundraiser for cancer. The DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, felt that it was very accurate. Air Force and Army Special Ops schools used the ambush scene for training videos. They felt that it was that good. It was number one in the box office, and it passed the 100 million mark in 37 days. Ford held 11.5% of the gross. Very smart, Mr. Ford. Fling across the room.
I hate this movie!
Yes. Also this year, in 1994, Harrison Ford had a cameo in the film Jimmy Hollywood.
Thank God, are we done talking about this movie?
We are, because we have also other stuff to talk about, which
Yay.
Is cool.
Yay!
I could not find a copy of this movie. It's not streaming. I didn't have time to buy it because I assumed that it would be streaming. And I also said, oh, the scene is probably on YouTube. It's not. He plays himself at the end of the movie. Jimmy Hollywood is a Barry Levinson film about an actor who decides to fight crime. it's with Joe Pesci and Christian Slater. Christian Slater is his sidekick. And I guess at the end of the movie, they make a movie of his life. And Harrison Ford plays Jimmy Hollywood. And Jimmy Hollywood gives him advice on acting. All the reviews said that he was very funny in it.
Interesting.
And it was a highlight of the movie, which is probably why it's not available to stream. If anybody has it and they want to send it to me, I was taken, like, I did not realize he was in it because it's uncredited. It's in all the books. It's not, I don't think it's on IMDb. So, like, I got into the book and I was like, wait, he's in another movie that we didn't know about?
Wow.
So,
I've watched it and done a whole episode.
A whole episode on his couple of lines. So, that's unfortunate. But something really awesome that happened to Harrison in 1994 is that he was awarded the Star of the Century Award by Show West, which is the convention of the National Association of Theater Owners. They actually, it got sold, and now it's called CinemaCon as of 2011.
Oh, Chris Pine was just there.
Yeah, yeah. So it's a really big deal, like, because you're presenting yourself to the people who are going to, you know, promote your movies and put it, I mean, have, you know, put them out. But when I was a kid, it was called Show West. When I found that it was called CinemaCon, I was like, oh, that I didn't even realize that. So this was a big deal, considering, you know, how many stars there have been in the last century.
Yeah.
Because this is what they said when they gave him the award. They said that more than 2 million in gross domestically is unparalleled in 100 years of filmmaking. And that he said in the last 2 years alone, how many, you know, number one movies he's had as well. He actually gave a speech, which we have, I think, briefly mentioned is funny because he does have a sort of social anxiety and speaking, but I guess maybe he prepped it. And he said, I saw my whole life flash in front of me. Am I dead? Is this my worst fear? Heaven's just like Las Vegas.
Because it's, for those who don't know, it's in Las Vegas.
Yes. I figured out why you're giving me this award 6 years early. If you waited any longer, you'd have to give it to Macaulay Culkin.
Oh, boy.
That's such a 90s joke.
Yeah.
And he just sort of talked about that he, which we've talked about, he's talked about, we've talked about, he's talked, I was going to say he's talked about on the show, like he's come on the show. We've talked about on the show is that he just feels like he's not necessarily the most talented guy, but with, you know, perseverance and being the only one left and just damn luck. So he called himself a lucky bastard during the speech. But it's pretty sort of amazing that someone who really was only a star for the last couple of decades of the whole century, to name him the box office star of the century.
Mm-hmm. And was, that was what, 94?
It was 94. That's very impressive.
I was like, it's right after Audrey died.
Yeah.
Audrey, but, I believe, died in 93.
Yeah, because it was right after she did Always, right?
Yeah, her she had pancreatic cancer, I believe.
I think, or you're liver. Right. Have you seen Always? I love Always. It's with Richard Dreyfuss.
I know, I refuse to watch a lot of Audrey movies. I limit myself.
Okay. Well,
I watch one every, like, couple of years, but I try really and keep all my...
It's
really
a
cameo.
She plays an angel. It's a very small part. It's really about Holly Hunter and Richard Dreyfuss.
I try and watch... When it comes to Audrey, I literally wait... Like, I'll wait, like, 3 years before I watch my new Audrey, because there's so little of them that I don't want to watch them all.
I like that. So you give yourself time so mm-hmm. that you can still enjoy it.
Yeah, I think I've seen like 5 or 6.
That's how I feel about not rewatching The West Wing too much, because I love it so much and I know it so well that I feel like if I watch it all the time, then it's going to sort of lose that.
Yeah, it's like Audrey, I always watch Breakfast.
At Tiffany's or mm-hmm. at Breakfast?
No, Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Oh, I do have a quote from James Earl Jones.
I'll read it.
Yeah, about Harrison.
He is also as generous as he is demanding, which is the way it should be. He's totally available to his fellow actors, and he demands availability from you as well. If he's going to be off camera to give you what you need, he wants you off camera giving him what he needs to. It's not a ritual, or it's not just a ritual. Something really has to happen. Yeah. There, that other stuff is Harrison Ford quote.
Oh, it's a Harrison Ford quote? Let's see. Oh, just about being a lucky bastard, I guess. Being in the right place at the right time and then doing the right thing, you cannot get where I get without luck. Bags of it. Fucking bags of it. That's our title. Fucking bags of it.
Fucking bags of it.
Although Star of the Century might get more people to listen.
Yeah. fucking bags
of it. So this is something that we sort of added on a little bit. So Rachel has not gotten a chance to see it because originally we were going to talk about the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles when we talked about Age of Avalon because it was a great way to talk
about Adeline.
Adeline? Oh, Avalon is a different movie.
I was like, Avalon is like the Ellen of Avalor.
Is actually a Barry Levinson movie, funny enough.
Yep, no.
Age of Adeline. Serves me right for not having my list of movies in front of me. God, I can't believe I don't know all of Harrison Ford's movies. I'm a terrible host,
guys. Don't worry, I got you. It's Age of Adeline.
You do. Okay. Anyway, for obvious reasons to talk about all the people who played younger Indiana Jones. But in 1993, he did film, and this was on the air, an episode of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. He did sort of the bumpers. So the episode was called Indiana Jones and the Mystery of the Blues. It is available on YouTube. I thought I could download it on my phone on Amazon. They don't have this episode for some reason. You can notice his beard from The Fugitive in these scenes. It takes place in 1950. So now, does Crystal Skull take place in 1950 also? Is that 55?
I think it's later. I think it's 55.
Okay. So he aged a lot in 5 years. I'm just saying. Indy had some tough times.
And Shia LaBeouf.
But what's interesting is that also in this episode is Jane Krakowski.
Interesting.
From 30 Rock and many other things. And obviously, eventually, his wife's show, just like with Greg German.
Alan McBeal.
And then there's a jazz musician in it who is played by Jeffrey Wright, who everyone will now know from Westworld, but also...
Or also B.T. from Hunger Games.
Oh, okay, there you go. I knew he was in a franchise, and I didn't remember which one. So the show basically was, if people aren't aware of it, was they got the idea during Last Crusade, because Young Indy was in it. It was originally supposed to be three different versions of Indy, but eventually it just sort of became his more sort of like, you know, college age, young teen, early 20s version played by Sean Patrick Flannery, who I had a little crush on when I was a little kid. But they also had the 10-year-old version of him played by Corey Carrier. And then there were bumpers, which I'm hearing from things that people are telling me and reading, but I can't prove it, is that... So they've been taken off of, they re-edited them for like DVD and, you know, VHS and now obviously streaming release. And that they chopped the bumpers off, which is like 100-year-old Indy. And he's like a crotchety old guy with like an eye patch. And he's always telling someone, well, you know, when I was a kid, I did this, you know. And so I wonder if that's part of canon now, because it's not part of the, but you can watch them all on YouTube. Because in Crystal Skull, he mentions an adventure he had in the TV series.
Really?
Yeah. So you can say, well, it is canon then.
So that means you can't kill off Harrison Ford in the new one.
That's what I'm thinking, but maybe they're afraid that Harrison Ford will be doing it till he's 100? And so, I don't know. I mean, they were kind of sort of corny. And also, I think we talked about on the show before, is that Carrie Fisher wrote an episode of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles.
My girl, Carrie.
So it was on from March 1992 to July of 1993. And then from 1994 to 1996, they did TV movies, which were all really John Patrick Flannery, because he was sort of the older, you know, hot and adult guy. And watching the episode, which is pretty much him in Chicago, and there's an Al Capone reference, and he gets to watch Louis Armstrong play jazz, and his roommate is Elliot Ness, and he goes on a reporter run with Ben Hecht, who eventually wrote The Front Page, which became His Girl Friday, and a lot of other really famous writing screenplays, with Hemingway. Is that, I think this was made for kids, like little kids, to learn history.
Yeah.
Because it felt really, really, really small. You should. He's quite adorable.
Boondock Saints?
I don't know. I've never seen Boondock Saints. No, I actually have.
No, this can't be. He was born in 1965. He'd be too old. What?
That's insane. He was probably playing younger than he was.
Yeah, because he was born in 1965.
But this.
So he was almost 30.
Oh my God! Yeah. No, he looked like he was in his 20s. In fact, in this episode, he's going to the University of Chicago. Yeah, well, you look that up. So I have actually a really funny story about this because I've always been a Harrison Ford fan, as we've talked about on the show. And
this guy?
Yeah,
that's him. He was almost 30.
Yeah, wow. He does not look almost 30. And he only, I don't think he really get... He
right? Yeah, 75 to 85 yeah. to 95, yeah.
It's, from what I remember from all the episodes, there's him in college, there's him in the Army. So he probably doesn't get past like 25 at all. That's pretty good. So my story about Young Indiana Jones Chronicles is that my parents got a call that they were going to stream the episode, and that's obviously not really what they did, but that's the word I'm using, into my cable box so that I could preview it as a child and then tell them what I thought about it. And I couldn't believe that I got this call that I, of all people, was going to get to watch something called The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And I remember being like really excited, and it was like they were going to tell me what time of day I had to turn on the TV. It was like a Saturday, like maybe like 3 o'clock or something. and they were going to, it was going to be a special channel that mm-hmm. I would turn on. And only on that channel would I be able to watch it. And then I would have to like tell them what I thought of it. And then I think very shortly after that, we became a Nielsen family for like a week. But like a booklet family, so it wasn't like they recorded it through like a device. Like we had to write in a booklet. So I was like really young, and I would like write in different. We had a booklet for every TV, so I wanted everything to get counted. So I'd be like, well, we watched this on this TV, but we watched that on that TV. But we really didn't.
You were just lying.
I just recorded it and watched it later. So I was very excited at the time to be able to watch the pilot of The Young Indiana Jones Chronicles before anybody else. Because obviously, now I get it. I was the demographic. This was not for adults. This was for children. So I'm very curious your thoughts on it once you watch a couple episodes.
Yeah, I haven't watched it yet.
Yeah, but we'll be getting onto that later. So I think they probably it wasn't doing very well in the ratings, so they probably bought Harrison on to sort of, you know, get people to watch it. And ended up being a 2-hour episode, actually, which feels like two episodes put together. But not only does he learn to play the saxophone or the soprano saxophone and meet Louis Armstrong, but then he solves a murder with
Harrison Ford?
Well, no, Indy.
Oh, okay.
So pretty much the episode is, instead of having old 100-year-old Indy as the book ends, it's Harrison Ford Indy.
Oh, okay.
And he's running away from these guys, and I'll put the link to the actual episode on the show notes so everyone can watch it. And they get snowed in, and they happen to find a soprano saxophone. And he's with an American Indian, and they're trying to get an artifact back. And he's like, I need that artifact. Like, it's very important to my people. And he goes, oh, I found an artifact that's important to my history and my people. I don't know if he says my people. But, like, and he opens it, and he plays a little bit. And then he tells the story.
Mm.
And then the bookend is that they, I don't know, should I give it away?
I don't know.
He goes against the henchmen, and there's a whole, like, you know, Indy does something really smart, and the guards are stupid, the henchmen that are after him, and he saves the day and gets it back for the guy, and then smiles and plays the sax, and with the lovely, lovely beard. And apparently on that set, which I think I mentioned before, is when George Lucas was like, I have this idea for a new Indiana Jones movie. And he goes, great, what is it? And George goes, it's about aliens. And Harrison goes, I don't want to do it.
George, no.
Yeah, I know. So I definitely recommend that if you like Indiana Jones, you watch it. It just may, you know, feel a little bit like it's for children, but it's still fun. And I should say it feels more like Forrest Gump because he always is meeting famous people. Like the episode that Carrie Fisher wrote, he loses his virginity to Mata Hari.
Carrie.
Yes, and I think she said that George Lucas gave her a lamp for writing that. I don't think she only got the lamp, but she mentioned something about a lamp.
Oh, Carrie Fisher.
Yeah.
Well, this is a good time to talk about our sponsor.
Yes, let's talk about our sponsor.
Guys, we are sponsored by the lovely, lovely skincare line of Haus Urban. That's H-A-U-S-U-R-B-A-N.
.com.
Com.
They are also on Twitter and Instagram, and they post really awesome stuff. They also have sometimes like webinars to talk about skincare. I love it because it has all natural products, and I also like the smell, and it's not like overpowering, so I feel like all girly and fun. But they also have lip glides, and we'll use the headshot, right?
Use headshot every day. Makes the face feel real smooth.
Is it like making you look younger? Or are you like now like 5 years old?
Yeah. Like, I got carded yesterday at brunch.
That's actually a really great slogan, right? Is use Haas Urban products and you will get carded at brunch.
I got carded. I'm almost 26. I got carded at brunch.
Yes. Or if you're younger and you need to get carded, then maybe you shouldn't use the products so that you can, you know, get alcohol. Or maybe you have a fake ID. I don't know.
We don't know your life.
I have no idea what your life is. I personally like to put the lip glide on my lips. I've mentioned before sangria is my favorite, but they have all kinds of different happy hour. They have Kahlua, which actually I did try the Kahlua, and I do that sometimes at night because it like chocolate on my lips before I go to bed.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. It's the one I use.
And then also I use the Wisteria Lane, which I actually use right now. My hands are kind of dry. I use the lovely body butter, but they have tons of stuff. They have toner and face wash. I am excited for the next gift package that we get so we can try new stuff.
Yes.
But you can try and get 20% off on your first order for listening to our wonderful podcast. And so that's Ford, F-O-R-D, just in case, I don't know, you didn't know how to spell Harrison Ford's last name. And you can use that. And then for being a lovely listener of the podcast, you will get 20% off your first order.
Woo!
And before we go, because we keep promising to do this, we're going to read some reviews.
Yeah, give me some.
Okay.
Okay. I'll go.
Go.
Great podcast for Harrison Ford fans. From IndieCroft.com.
Ooh, I think that they might be a, perhaps an Indiana Jones connoisseur.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Awesome podcast. Lauren and Rachel are very entertaining and bring a lot to each episode. They do their research and it's been cool learning new things about Harrison Ford that I never knew before. Subscribe and follow. You won't be disappointed.
Greatest podcast ever. I've listened to a lot of podcasts out there, and I can safely say without a doubt that the podcast is the absolute best podcast on the market. Wow. As a big Han Solo fan, it is really great to hear what else the Han Solo actor, Harrison Ford, have left to the industry. What a man.
Harrison. From Harrison is a Babe. I love everything about this podcast, from learning random facts about Harrison's movie to hearing your stories about Harrison. I would highly recommend this podcast, even if you aren't a fan of Harrison's.
Any fan of Harrison should try it. From Frozen Force Leah. Wow, this is really small print. If you like Han Solo or Indiana Jones or Mr. Ford himself, you will like this podcast. His co-stars are brought up sometimes too. Yes, we do that a lot. Because that was me, by the way. Because you just can't talk about him as Han Solo and not mention Carrie or Mark. That is true.
You also learn a lot about Chris Pine on this podcast.
You do.
He's not ever worked with Harrison Ford.
We can only really hope.
It's a war movie.
And then, oh yeah, that's our one unpositive review. Do you want to read that?
Oh yes,
because it's super funny, and we can take criticism. But the thing is, I have no idea. I know which episode this is, but it's not helpful.
What episode is this?
I think okay. We'll read it first, and I'll tell you what I think it's from.
It's a war movie. The 17th time she said that, I turned it off.
I think this is from our Hanover Street episode.
Who said it's a war movie?
Me! Said it! It's a criticism of me!
I was like, that's why you don't like it. I was like, I don't get it.
No, I didn't say I didn't like it. I said it's the only...
Hey, Van! Suck my dick!
I think that Van has stopped listening to the show. I do love that the first episode that he picked, or she picked, was Hanover Street.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like the worst.
It's a war movie.
It's a terrible movie. I'm guessing. I don't go back and listen to the episodes, but I think that was me because you were like, I don't get the movie. And I was like, it's a war movie. I won't say that ever again.
It's a war movie,
it's
Van.
It's a war movie. And then the last one that we have, and then we're up to the ones that we read. Actually, here I wrote.
Are we on the back?
I think we read some of those. Well, here, I'll read the back and see if we did. I'll read this one. I think that we were up to the ones we've already read on the air. Loves it. Darden Lisa. Lauren and Rachel, guys, are great. You are so knowledgeable about Harrison Ford and subjects related to his films. Plus, your voices sound awesome. Aww. Very inviting. Loves it.
Yep, I think we did all this.
So thank you, everybody.
Oh, yeah, my quote about a huge boner for a 74-year-old. Thanks, guys.
That's
someone
the kind
from
of,
Greece quoted.
That's the kind of quotes that you're going to get on the show.
Guys, that is the kind of quotes you're going
to
get.
Yeah, so if you want to hear about her lady boner, right? That's lady boner?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You looked at me odd. I was like, did I say it incorrectly?
I'm looking past you at the picture of Chris Pine that's coming through the
That's right.
Window.
I'm sorry. I can't say the word lady boner and you have to look at a picture of Chris Pine. Oh, you can't really see it. It's through like
the... You can over that. It's the curtain is over Chris Pine's face.
It is. And it reminds me, I once saw a play with Diane Wiest and she kept hiding behind this curtain. And I was like, I see how this works for your character, but I can't see you. Why didn't the director tell you to move away? She was like hiding from her son. Like, oh, I was like, I can't see you. I love Diane Wiest.
Oh, Chris Pine.
I would do a podcast on Diane Wiest, but no one would listen.
I would do one on Chris Pine, but I think everyone would be like tired of it with it.
You've talked about him on Hard Bodies, your other show, right?
No.
No?
Hannah's making me wait till episode 50.
That's insane.
Hannah and I have this thing where I do not like Tom Cruise. So that's her favorite. So we're waiting until episode 75. Mm-hmm. She gets a Tom Cruise episode. I have to wait till we get to 50 to do Chris Pine.
What is this arbitrary? Like, what's the number thing?
Hannah was just like, it's a bigger episode. And my list, we have our lists at the end of each episode where we put in chronological order our favorites that we have.
Mm-hmm.
So I think right now the top of my list is Tom Hiddleston. And then it's like Diego Luna and then like Colin Firth, I think. And then maybe Dan Stevens. But I'm like, that's not reflective of me. I was like, my number one ride or die is Chris Pine, and he's not on this fucking list.
Well,
and so
anticipation is the best drug, I guess.
We're going to watch The Finest Hours.
You'll have to promote it on the show when that episode comes out.
Oh, well, we're trying to do it live. We're trying to make it a big thing.
Live? Wow. That would be
no
very,
one
very
would
impressive.
Come. We want to go. We want a live one so we can make everyone watch The Finest Hours.
So you can join us in 2 weeks with Sabrina.
Yay!
Our next film.
Oh, I don't have to watch that again. I just watched it.
I'll watch it again. And then I think I might actually watch the original Sabrina and compare it.
Because
Billy Wilder is my favorite director-writer. The Apartment is my absolute favorite movie. I think we have established that I enjoy Mr. Ford in a nice romantic comedy.
Audrey.
Oh, Audrey. Well, that too.
Her Audie.
That's another reason why I would like to watch the original Sabrina as well. You do not have to do that, but I'm going to do it. we'll have a special guest.
Special guest.
So join us in 2 weeks. But until then, you can follow us.
Join us.
Da-na-na-na-na-na.
Join us in an hour or two. We've got magic to do.
Okay, now we have to stop because then we have to pay
just
for it.
Just for you. We didn't sing half of it. We went...
That's true. But I can't afford to be sued by the writers of Pippin.
Stephen Schwartz.
If anyone didn't know, that was from Pippin.
It's
now,
magic to do.
Now, if Harrison Ford did Pippin...
He would be Charlemagne.
That would be a whole other story.
He'd be Charlemagne.
In fact, let's start a petition. Whoever wants Harrison Ford to do some jazz hands.
No, he would be Charlemagne. Chris Pine could be Pippin. And then we...
Oh, no, he wouldn't be Pippin.
No, he would be Charlemagne.
That's still jazz hands?
No, Charlemagne doesn't do jazz
hands.
Oh,
the king.
That's
the king.
That is the lead player.
Oh, okay.
Who is Ben Vereen.
It's been
and
a long
Patina.
Time since... It's been a long, long time since I've seen
it. It's my dad's favorite. When I was a baby, not a baby, I was like 2 or 3, when it was bath time, my dad used to take me in the shower and we would sing back and forth, Corner of the Sky.
Oh, that's so nice.
So that's what everyone always makes fun, because when I say, like, no, I love musical theaters because my dad, when I was a kid, when bath time, I used to go, everything has its season, and
aww,
he would sing back the rest.
See, it was my favorite thing when I was in kindergarten, and so a few years ago, I did finally see like a production, because I'd only seen the video of the original Broadway production. And I was like, I don't remember any of this. And I know it was my favorite.
Uh-huh.
So I don't remember as much because I was super, super young. Yet I remember Annie. I guess I watched Annie more. But it was all about Annie, Pippin, and the Pajama Game when I was in kindergarten. And aren't you glad that you know this?
I'm just Pippin, Tommy, and Grease.
Well,
my dad used to make me watch Tommy all the time.
For me, it's about Grease 2. But I know it's a bad movie, but it's for personal reasons. I love Grease 2.
All right, guys, this is when we're wrapping up because we're talking about
so where can they find you, Rachel?
Follow me on Twitter at Rachel Leishman. Follow my writing at Culturist, Pop Wrapped, Fangirlish, Wizards and Whatnot, and Doctor Who Watch. Also listen to Hard Bodies and Telemazing. Boo. No. Oh, and my Instagram, Rachel_Leishman, and my Tumblr, Rach Solo. Lauren, where can they find you?
Oh my God, I wish we had recorded that with a video because the hand gestures was amazing. Yeah. I think there was some voguing in there somewhere.
There was voguing.
You can find me only on the Twitter at the moment.
The tweets,
yeah. I am at my name, Lauren Milberger, LauRenMilberger. I'm contemplating the Instagram thing. We'll see. I don't know if my life is interesting enough for Instagram, but we'll see. So you can see my life and uninteresting tales on Twitter. But you can also follow us on Twitter at the Fordcast PC. We are also on Facebook. We are on Twitter? I said that. No. Mm-hmm. We are on Tumblr and Instagram at the Fordcast Podcast, whereas Twitter were the Fordcast PC because we ran out of characters. So, you know, if you follow us, not only will you see breaking news about Harrison Ford, about the podcast, but you can win stuff. Win stuff. It's a new century. You should win things. It's not the 90s anymore. We're going to give you stuff. So you can go on our website and by clicking contests and then going under seasonal contests for the spring winter contest, answer a trivia question from today's episode. We don't know what that question is, but you know now because you're listening. Maybe. She doesn't know. I don't know.
Maybe it'll be, what actor does Rachel love?
That could be it. But if you don't
answer the question, there's a bunch.
So write an essay. No.
List my top five.
The more places that you follow us, the more entries that you'll get. And then after each episode is posted, the last question goes away. So that chance is gone. Right now we have some prize packs, so it's not just one choice. You can get a Carrie Fisher prize pack. You can get an Indiana Jones prize pack.
Yeah.
You could win a beautiful original design vintage Blade Runner poster.
Yeah.
You can get a Star Wars ring with Han Solo in carbonite. Yeah. It's awesome, and they may go away, and you can never win them again unless you go and do it. We'll be ending this contest in May, and then we'll be starting our summer contest with different prizes, more prizes. I don't know. You can also, for a limited time, go on iTunes and review us, and we will give you a prize. We will give you a sticker. I know. Oh, my God. Review us anytime, but for a limited time, either till we run out of stickers or I decide to end this, you'll not get a sticker. But we would still love your review. And if you want us to, like we just did, we will read them on the air.
Yeah.
Just create a profile on iTunes.
Yeah, Chris Pine.
Sure, that would be great. I love Chris Pine.
No, Chris Pine listens to this. I can feel it in my bones.
All right, well, on that note...
Guys, in case you didn't know, I'm losing it. I'm tying my hair to each...
This is what happens when we record two episodes back to back. So we will see you in 2 weeks with Sabrina. We are so excited to be doing Sabrina. And, well, not doing her, literally, because that would be terrible.
Oh, boy.
Anyway, I'm Lauren Milberger.
And I'm Rachel Leishman.
And we are so sorry you had to listen to us not talk about Clear and Present Danger.
Bye.
Bye.